Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today is Friday, March 21st, 2014. My name is Angela Walton-Raji, and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. Well, everyone, hello, hello. Wow, welcome finally to spring. At least officially on the calendar, welcome to spring. That's right. Yesterday, I believe, was the first day officially, although when I grew up, it was always the 21st of March that was always the first day. Regardless, I just want to be able to think and believe that winter is behind us. Well, it is at least a pretty day, and the snow that we got last week has melted. I am so pleased to see the ground again. Oh my goodness. And hey, it might even reach 60 degrees. Won't that be a thrill today? Anyway, hope you all are doing well. Hope you've had a good week of research. And I hope that you are busy with all of those projects. In fact, I want to talk about genealogy projects. That's sort of the word of the day. Do you have a genealogy project? Well, actually, I'm just raising the question because I've had, it seems, several conversations in the last week, 2 weeks, even 3 weeks with individuals, some of whom are immersed in their various projects, and some have actually expressed, gee, you know, I wish I had a niche. I wish I had a special area that I could really get lost in. I love genealogy, but I wish I had a specialty like some other people seem to have one. Well, you know what? We'll talk about that in just a wee bit. But first, a big congratulations is in order. I want to extend a very strong congratulations to a group of people who decided to tell their own story. They call themselves the Memory Keepers. They are individuals, there are five of them, who all have something in common, and their element in common is having ancestors coming from Edgefield, South Carolina. They are, and I'm calling out their names, they are Harris Bailey Jr., Bernice Alexander Bennett, Ellen LaVon Butler, Ethel Daly, and Vincent Shepherd. They can now announce the publication of their work, which was a collaboration, and the work is called Our Ancestors, Our Stories. Now, I want to point out something. 5 or 6 years ago, many of these individuals did not know each other. In fact, after reading the introduction, even 2 years ago, some of them didn't know each other. But I'll just simply say that it looks as if the ancestral forces were probably at play, and with time, they met on varying occasions. Some introduced one to another member. Well, regardless of how and when they met, their common tie, having roots in the same county, and again, that county is Edgefield, South Carolina, well, that common tie led to a wonderful project. Our Ancestors, Our Stories. I got my copy yesterday from Bernice Bennett, and I am so happy to see this emerge. I'm really proud of them. I mean, this is an individual who connects so easily with other people. We listen to Bernice's show a lot every week, but she connected with other individuals, and together they decided to say, hey, you know what? We've got some things in common. We ought to write a book. But how many people say that? People say that all the time. I've been at the archives sitting next to someone maybe who's discovered a record they didn't know about, or perhaps discovering an ancestor for the very first time, and they get so excited, oh my gosh, this could be a book. And after the euphoria dies, that's kind of the end of it, and maybe their ancestors become trapped in those binders, and that's kind of where it goes. But these individuals got serious. And, you know, it's just really, really exciting to see this. I read the introduction, which was very, very good, by Dr. Orville Burton, who is a very well-known historian, particularly in that part of the country. But you know, it's one of the things that I like, the fact that he gave an overview to the history. He gave a backdrop, a historical backdrop in terms of what was happening, the sentiment of the people, how even when slavery ended, of course, the local people were not too thrilled to start paying individuals, and how, and we've got to remember to think about this, you know, how did freedom come and how was it accepted? Just because there was an edict that slaves were no longer enslaved, then suddenly everyone's saying, okay, now let's see here, we're going to pay you $5 a day. No, not quite like that. And it was not warmly accepted. And he talks about that history, and then come their stories. Oh my goodness. But you know what? What makes this significant? Many people, many genealogists, and many genealogists, professional, certified genealogists, are not always aware that early county histories, early genealogies that were published over the years, intentionally omitted stories of Black people from the community. And especially, this is so incredible because in many counties, many, many, many counties in the South, the majority of the people were people of African ancestry. But yet, they were admitted. Their stories were never considered even worthy of inclusion. Nothing happened to them of significance. So it was always believed. Well, this collaboration of these five people, the Memory Keepers, is a wonderful method of filling that gap. And they decided to basically tell their own family stories. Some shared their, because I have been thumbing through since yesterday, some shared their research journey, how they happened to even make the decision to record their family history. And they've put their own people back on the historical landscape. And sometimes that landscape was not a pretty one, maybe geographically or physically very pretty, but no, not always an inviting one. People had to live against a hostile community. One ancestor was murdered as he tried to vote. And you know what? The strange thing is that we still see efforts to stop people from exercising that right to vote today. The same sentiment. No, they can't just go up to the polls and shoot someone, but they will do other things to block that. And it's so interesting to see that story shared and to realize, oh yeah, some of these obstacles have been going over quite some time. Amazing stories that are there. Some are amusing as well. I did start reading last night and was amused to see one story. In fact, what I was chatting with Bernice just yesterday, she shared the story with me, and then I found the story that she was referring to when a person talked about going south every summer, and mom would always go south and take the children from New York with her one summer. They went down, and mom would either teach or do what other kinds of jobs she could get to earn money. And one summer she went down and she ended up picking cotton and got the daughters involved. Well, the daughters, of course, weren't used to that hot sun and that hard work, and started putting twigs and leaves and grass in the bag, and how that eventually became the very last time mom actually went south to make money for the summer, and how the fact that they ended up owing the landowner some money because of the fact that the children were like, look, we're not putting all this stuff in here, and they needed to weigh it down. Funny story, amusing story, great story to share, how amusing. But so many more things that, again, it just is a platform that they created and have used to put their family back on the soil. What a wonderful, wonderful effort. Congratulations. I am just so happy to see it. Anyway, and I will make one more notation. It is well documented, and for all of those citation police out there, each chapter has very full end notes with clear citations for just about everything that they can prove it. It's very well done, and it's a fun read. Anyway, wow, things are going on. I love hearing about projects. By the way, there's a really neat website that's devoted to a project. It's coming off of the Georgetown University site. It was shared earlier this week, and it's called the Jesuit Plantation Project. This contains some data, but it also contains information of slaves that were eventually sold by the Jesuits. That's right, the Jesuit priests, you know, SJ, Society of Jesus, who were early slaveholders in the state of Maryland. And there's information on this Jesuit plantation project of the names of slaves that were sold by the Jesuits to a plantation owner in Louisiana. And, you know, that always sort of tugs at my heart, especially when I hear of slaves that were sold south. I'm a descendant of slaves that were taken south. I'm a descendant of slaves that were taken west. I'm a descendant of slaves also who were on the western frontier. And I, you know, certainly always celebrate with joy when I hear things of people, certainly on the coastal states, where, you know, they're celebrating the history, their legacy. But many of us whose ancestors, by the time freedom came, were in the Deep South, we don't even understand the first American tie and where we were, because our folks were separated. Our folks were sold south. You know, in early 1700, many of us had ancestors in Virginia, but we'll never know where. By the time freedom came, 150 years later, they were in Tippah County, Mississippi, or they were in Campbell County, Tennessee, or in Indian Territory, in the Choctaw Nation. So many of us don't necessarily know from where they actually emerged on American soil. Were they coming through Virginia? Were they coming through the Carolinas, most likely Sullivan's Island near Charleston? Or were they coming in through Mobile or possibly through New Orleans? So we don't know. We don't know that history. And it's really something to hear about the Jesuit Plantation Project, because here were slaves who were on the coast of origin, where they first came in the Americas, in Maryland. They probably came through St. Mary's City. And suddenly, they're sold to Louisiana. And by the time freedom came, 150 years later or more, they were in Louisiana, born in Louisiana. But many don't know that their ancestors had been sold, you know, certainly more than a century before, from Maryland to Louisiana. And it's really kind of interesting, because I have been at least familiar to a certain degree, a small degree, with the presence of people who were enslaved by the Jesuits in Maryland, as I'm familiar with the work of Dr. Agnes Callum, a noted Maryland researcher who was a direct descendant of slaves from Jesuit plantations. And I learned from her that there are records that go back pretty far, even as early as the late 1800s, I'm sorry, the late 1600s. And the one thing about those who were enslaved by Jesuits, at least if nothing else, they were committed to documenting their enslaved people. So they baptized them, they allowed them to receive the sacraments of the church, and as a result, this has created a good number of records. Now, many of these records themselves are now housed at Georgetown University, I believe at Healy Hall. However, this website on the Jesuit Plantation Project also rests, by the way, on a Georgetown site. It does contain the names of over 200 individuals who were sent to Louisiana. And I'm just really excited to see that. You may want to take a look at it. Who knows, you know, of course, where the individuals ended up. That's sometimes the hard thing, because many of the names are sometimes common names. But it's also enlightening in another way, too. And sometimes, you know, if you find there's a little fact that makes you kind of tilt your head and go, or that makes you raise an eyebrow and say, wow, I didn't know that. Sometimes that's the beginning of a project right there. In this particular story, as an example, I think it's interesting that many people are unaware that the Catholic Church has had such a presence in terms of the lives of African American families. The very oldest Catholic church, Catholic parish that's African American is from Maryland. It's in Baltimore City, and this church, St. Francis Xavier, has been a religious community, has been a community of faith since 1795. That's amazing. So a lot of people may decide, this is kind of interesting. I'm Roman Catholic. Maybe I should look at Roman Catholic African-American history. Could be an interesting project for someone. You never know what's going to catch your attention. And of course, I encourage people, whatever it is that appeals to you, embrace it. And that could be the beginning of a project. A picture was shared this week on Facebook, and it was a gathering of individuals. I believe they were from, and there was, I don't remember the community, but it was a beautiful portrait of some founders of an AME church in a particular community. It was just very nice, and they were all identified. And someone else asked the question, wow, oh, I would love it if there was something like that on Baptists. Well, there is. There is an amazing poster that's depicting the National Baptist Convention. Beautiful portrait of over, 60 or so portraits on that one big, massive poster. I'm saying poster. It was a photograph, I guess, when it was created, but I have it as a poster and I purchased it from someone several years ago from a dealer. But the point is that that's a project right there. Every one of those individuals who have been identified, that's an opportunity to go research them and create a biography. Wow, that could be a fabulous project for someone. Anyway, take a look at the Jesuit Plantation Project. I think it might attract your attention by all means. I just think it's one of those things to certainly explore and see what's there. Tomorrow's going to be a busy day, at least in the Mid-Atlantic area. I know people from Philadelphia are going to be in attendance, as well as people from Baltimore. And if I didn't have a conflict, I would be there too. Well, I'm referring to the fact that this is a new Afro-American Historical and Genealogical Society that is based in Delaware. Well, they're having a regular meeting, but they're going to be members of the Baltimore chapter in attendance. They're going to be some from Philadelphia. This new group is up and running, and there are going to be people there who are coming to show their support and their solidarity. And as I said, I know the Agnes Callum chapter out of Baltimore is going to be there. And the point is just it's a chance to be encouraging and to fellowship with a brand new group. Some are beginners to the whole genealogy experience, and some are seasoned but have not been a part of their own local group. So I just think it's wonderful that people from Maryland as well as Pennsylvania are going to Delaware tomorrow to join and spend some time with the new Delaware African American Genealogy Society. So a shout out to everyone who's going and a shout out to the folks in Delaware. And by the way, that is also in Maryland. There is going to be an interesting meeting tomorrow in Central Maryland. The Central Maryland chapter is going to have two speakers. I know that Eleanor Thompson, I believe is her last name, and Tina, whose last name is escaping me right at this moment. I hope to remember it. They're going to be putting up an amazing display in terms of looking at death records, looking at funeral programs, looking at mortician's logs, photos, memoirs, and so much more. Anyway, they have some research guides and some other handouts that are going to be distributed, and there are going to be some interesting things that I think that members of that group are going to be able to listen to as well. So it's just kind of neat. I'm very, very impressed with the direction that particular chapter seems to always be going. There's always something on the program, and then this group meets every month in Columbia, Maryland at the Owen Brown Community Center. And there's certainly, a hands-on type of group, and it's just really nice to hear about that and to see that. So I understand changing to another event. Well, of course, April is just around the corner, what, 10 days away or so? Well, there's registration is now open for an event going on in Columbia, not Maryland, but South Carolina. This is going to be a preservation conference. And this is going to be on Tuesday, April 22nd in Columbia, South Carolina. And it's going to be actually some sessions that are going to be presented along with Drayton Hall, the estate. And it's great. You know, this is something that's good, I think. It's going to be looking at post-Civil War African-American community. And, you know, after we get through the part of just the initial phase of documenting the family, I hope that at some point there's an interest to slow down and to look at what happened during those years of post-Civil War, of early days of freedom. Because, you know, it's truly, 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 that was sort of the bridge, that really tenuous time period in terms of from slavery to freedom. Keeping in mind, some weren't even sure what that meant for them to suddenly be free. And they've had an institution that's been ingrained in them for so many decades, centuries. And then there were those who weren't quite sure what to do with people whom they had never considered deserving of pay, deserving of treatment as employees, as opposed to treatment as property. These are difficult times, and it was difficult for all who were part of that story. So looking at that post-bellum, we hear about antebellum life. What about post-bellum life? And I'm excited to see that post-Civil War life is being explored. So this is called, of course, Things Seen and Unseen, looking at post-Civil War African-American community. And this is looking specifically at this one area at Drayton Hall. And that's just really kind of interesting to see. And I guess secondly, as one looks at it, you know, sometimes we explore history through one dimension. We look at it through the dimension, well, of course, depending upon who you are. Some will look at it from the perspective of, you know, days of glory lost, you know, to the evil invaders from the north. At least that's the way a lot of things are presented, that many of us have grown up seeing that. And we just kind of keep quiet and go, It's sort of watching the euphoria that some people have when they watch Gone with the Wind. And many of us just look at it and go, okay. But the fact is that there is the other set of eyes through which one can look. And the look of you know, wow, you know, there's the story of having to always fend off the assaults that are coming, sometimes physically, sometimes through political policies. Yes, sometimes being a victim. And in spite of that, you know, people didn't always fall out of bed every morning on their knees singing, "Nobody Knows." I mean, sometimes people got up, looked forward to the day, interacted with friends, had conflicts sometimes with neighbors who were part of the family. And there were lives of real people. Well, it's good to be able to tell that story as well, to tell the story of the people as people. You know, it's interesting because those who descend from those people of power from the 18th and 19th century, they tell the story of their people as people. In fact, they sort of put the slaves in the background, but they tell the story of their own people as people. Well, perhaps we have a greater challenge now to put aside our story as a victim. Don't forget it. Tell it. It is important. But also to tell that other story, the other story of our families as people, as meeting challenges, as having joys in their life, as having points of sadness in their life, but the whole person, and not the person who every day had to wake up and fight the greater enemy that was in place. But there's also the person who had to wake up from day to day and hope that their project that they have, their immediate project, whether it was spinning something that they want to be able to accomplish a certain amount, and now they're doing it for themselves, to be able to hope that they're going to be able to have a successful day in the fields and work on the crop that they're trying to grow to feed the family. And, you know, these are people who had regular challenges. Are they going to be able to afford that new plow? Or, you know, all these things that we don't even think of. Oh, yeah, they had to deal with that in terms of day-to-day living as well. So I think that also, and this is what I like about this event that's going on, the preservation conference, they're also trying to research history and build some rapport between a former estate, a plantation site, and the descendants. That is how people are healed, when they come together and share common history. So it's something to give some thought to anyway. So I'm really excited. Anyway, what I was able to learn about this event coming up at Drayton Hall, this event coming up in South Carolina at the Preservation Conference of Columbia, is that you're going to have someone from Drayton Hall, pardon me, George McDaniel is going to be there, and Toni Carrier is going to be presenter. If you've not heard her speak, you should. She is Low Country Africana, and she is going to present some oral history on the postbellum African American community. This is such a vibrant story. And again, what do I always say? Look for those things that put your ancestors back on the historic landscape. And these are the kinds of things that could serve as a model for other sites and other organizations that are preservation organizations, by all means. So, you know, if you're in that part of the country, I hope you do have a chance to attend that. By the way, speaking of April, which is going to be here in a very few days, about 10 days or so from now, I want to mention that there's going to be an announcement coming up in early April. The winners of the scholarships for Maggie are going to be announced in a few days. And so you want to keep your, that'll be in early April. You know, keep your eyes and ears open for that. There's one for track one. There are two awards for track four. So, good news, you know, forthcoming, something to look forward to. Well, I hope you had a chance to tune in last night. You will have been able to hear Antoinette Harrell, who talked about some of the research and the records that can be found at Archives 2 in College Park, Maryland, about, well, involuntary servitude, or peonage as it's known. And she's done a lot of work with that. She was a guest last night on Bernice Bennett's show, and not always a comfortable subject to listen to. But certainly worthwhile. You may have stories in the family about some individuals whose labor was just suddenly, labor on their own behalf was taken away from them for some time. You may hear that some individuals were still forced into a sort of bondage, who were enslaved, even 20th century people who were working continually. And something that continued for quite some time. And this was widely known. You know, until we begin to truly uncover some of the things that happen, how do we heal? Because these things are swept under the river. The perpetrators have gone free. And just a real, real, real tragedy. And, of course, these are people who, you know, are now still wreaking havoc in other ways with frightening political maneuvers. They're, you know, wow, we've got to understand that some of these places, some of these things are not new. There's so little in the human story that is new. But anyway, things to certainly give a lot of thought about. But as you know, Bernice's show airs every Thursday. By the way, special treat next week. What did I mention at the beginning of this show today? I mentioned the Memory Keepers. Well, guess what? Next week, the Memory Keepers will be the guests on Research at the National Archives and Beyond. So you do want to tune in. And as you know, her show airs every Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Anyway, wow, look at the time. It has passed by so quickly. Things are all going on. But anyway, wow, lots of projects. You know, I'm just hoping that you can get some ideas. And I'm going to devote an entire episode in the near future to project ideas, how individuals have been able to take an idea that they like, take something that's a passion of theirs, merge it with their genealogical interest, and take off in a new direction. Sometimes maybe something just catches your attention. Look at the interest that Joseph McGill has taken in preserving slave cabins to now he has the Slave Dwelling Project and is extending an invitation to others to join him and another group of individuals on an evening of slave dwelling, and which I'm sure will be a very moving experience for many people. And it's something that if you happen to be in a community where such a thing really takes place, it might be worthwhile to see what that's about. Really step into another time and step into really sacred ground, I say, because even though ancestors are not buried there, so much time, so much heartbreak, sometimes a handful of joy, so many sorrows took place in those buildings. And you know, if nothing else, they need to be honored because they had no choice of where they were. And wow, he took an interest and turned it more into more than a niche. He's now devoted this and turned it into a passion and an amazing project. Anyway, project, as I said, the word of the day. I'm going to wrap it up. Look at the time. Oh my goodness, I do tend to go on, but you know, I do appreciate you for taking time out of your day to stop what you're doing and to tune in and listen to me. Thank you. And thank those of you who've sent me announcements and shared some of your news with me that I could pass on to you. I know you have a lot of choices and other things that you could be doing. So please, you know, understand that you are appreciated. In the meantime, have a great week of research, everyone. And of course, continue to do what you do. And you know what that is. Keep researching, keep documenting, and always keep sharing what you find. Have a great week, everyone. Be well and be safe. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.